Derek Patterson has been telling an unsettling story his whole adult life. It began before he was born, when his stepfather, Steve Patterson, volunteered to fight in Vietnam for three tours because he wanted to fly helicopters. In 1967, Steve made a risky decision. Now, Derek, a furniture maker in West Hampton, Massachusetts, wants to reverse it. WFCR's Karen Brown presents the story, starting with an incident in the jungle.
The story, as he told it, was towards the end of his last tour. He was flying patrols close to his base, and he came upon a rice paddy, and he saw that there was a dead human being on it. And he flew in a little closer, and he noticed that it was a Viet Cong soldier. And he would check on this body every so often, and when the picking quote was right, he landed and took the skull and the two femur bones. He boxed these remains and sent them to his aunt in Riverside, California, and it was around Christmas time. And they took the box and they put it under the tree, and the dog got into it. He kept sniffing the box, and so they opened the box, and surprise, surprise.
After that Christmas, the bones remained in storage for more than 10 years. Steve was discharged from Vietnam, a decorated officer. He became a bush pilot in Venezuela, where he met and married Jeanne, a former model with two young children, Lucia and Derek.
Derek adored Steve. Steve was a very free-spirited person. He was flying most of the time, so he was like a weekend father. He would come home, you know, one weekend out of a month.
Those guys always had to live on the edge of adrenaline. That's what those wacky, quote-unquote, Vietnam helicopter pilots did. And my dad was one of them.
We were flying in the mountains down in Venezuela.
Wilfredo Quintero was Steve's best friend and co-pilot in Venezuela.
And we have an emergency call. The first time I see a guy dead without face. And he told me, say, laughing, you know, are you scared? The guy is dead already, so it's not going to bother you any longer.
The Pattersons left Venezuela in the early 1980s and moved to Garrison, New York, to try living a more domestic life.
We were going through things because we were trying to set up a home, and there were all these boxes of things, dishes, china, and in one of the boxes were the bones that Steve had brought back. I opened the box, and it was a little bit startled.
And I remember going in the garage one day, and he had tinfoil wrapped around him, and I would see that, and I'd walk 10 feet away from it.
They were in a metal box that animals couldn't get into, mice. How the bones were then moved a bit was one year when a friend had sent me a gingerbread house. So Steve took the bones out and put them in another box, and we put the gingerbread house in that box. And Steve, at that point, I suppose maybe was trying to talk about Vietnam, but he couldn't bring himself to talk about it, really.
No one ever asked Steve why he took the bones, although historians say soldiers throughout history have brought home enemy remains as a sort of human trophy.
He made reference a lot to transporting dead in body bags, which he didn't mind, and transporting the wounded, which he did mind, because the wounded were screaming and pleading and bleeding. And I guess if you see that day in and day out, when you do come across a body like this, you know, it marks, you know, taking the enemy.
Steve was not a malicious person. Anybody who knew Steve would understand that. It was just something he did.
In the beginning, I was thinking that he showed no respect to that body. But then when I learned a little bit more what he went through and how he was feeling about that war, he lost something there, and he took something back.
The bones stayed in the garage. Derek moved to Western Massachusetts, got married, had two children, got divorced. Derek and his father rarely saw each other.
We had a love-hate relationship. He was my hero. I mean, you know, everybody liked him, and he was one of the best pilots around. But as I grew older, and I saw how he conducted his life and how he did things, I don't like doing things against the grain. He wasn't like that.
Steve couldn't take the 9-to-5 life, so he went back to work as a bush pilot in Venezuela while Jean stayed in garrison. Then last November, the family got a call.
He was flying from Puerto La Cruz to Caracas, and total accident. The control tower gave him a heading in a bad area, you know, just low visibility, and he flew into the side of a mountain.
When Steve died in his airplane crash, the thing that hurt me the most was when we could finally get his remains. They were put in the back of a truck in a body bag and bounced around until we could go get all the permission in Venezuela to have him cremated. His ashes are sitting in a cookie jar in the living room because the granddaughter, Sophia, was saying that he liked cookies so much. So when we brought the ashes back, we found a cookie jar, and that's where he is right now.
The house in Garrison sits above a babbling brook, overlooking the Hudson River. Since Steve died, Derek has been driving down on weekends, going through papers and pictures.
I picked up a photograph, and it was him at flight school, and he looked like a kid. It just struck me. And just quickly looking at dates and stuff, he was in his 20s. And I would say probably 22, 23 when he picked up these bones. That same weekend, I was listening, I think it could have been NPR, and it was a story of yet another senator flying to Vietnam, trying to recover more of our guys, the missing in action. I don't think we've ever sat back to think about the other guys. And I have one of these other guys, and I want him to go home.
After Derek called and told me, you know, it was something that's what should have been done a long time ago. He was somebody's son, perhaps father, or maybe Derek feels, too, that he's taking the responsibility that Steve perhaps never took.
I drove down to New York. We walked in the garage. She handed me the bag. And that was it.
Derek put the plastic bag of bones into the trunk of his car and didn't open it until several weeks later.
So, I kind of double-wrapped them because I didn't really want to look. And there he is.
Can you describe what we're looking at?
We're looking at a skull. He's got most of his teeth, no lower jaw, and two femur bones that are wrapped in aluminum foil. I'm shaking right now. I mean, this is upsetting. If he does get a place of honor as I close the trunk to my car again, it'd be great to tell his mother that, you know, here he is.
I went recently to the Museum of Natural History in the city, and they had a very beautiful exposition on Vietnam. And the thing that hit me, I think, the most was when a person dies a violent death, if the body is not taken care of properly in burial, they live in purgatory or hell. You know, this is what was happening to the bones that were in the garage. The sad thing now is, who was he? How will they ever be able to find out who he was?
Derek contacted Project Vietnam in Lubbock, Texas, where staff are trying to learn the identity of the Vietnamese soldier, one of 2 million still missing.
We've gone through books, I've pulled out everything I can, and there's no person that I know of that would be able to give us any inclination as to where this incident happened.
I never asked. I wish I could have found out. I mean, there's a million things I wish I could have found out.
Derek is waiting for word from American and Vietnamese officials in Hanoi before he ships the remains back to Vietnam. And almost every day, he thinks about what his father did.
And I really don't pass judgment on that one, because I can't even imagine what it's like to be in a war. If I saw my friends and dying left and right and seeing the stuff that those guys saw, I don't think it would be a big deal to pick up a skull. I don't know if it was Vietnam. I don't know, but something was triggered in that head. It would be interesting to know if that would not have happened, who that person would be now, my father.
For now, the bones are in Derek's furniture workshop, sitting next to him every day. For WFCR, I'm Karen Brown.